Well, Sal Khan thinks he's seen the future of education, and it involves more student-teacher interaction, more technology, more creativity. His Khan Academy has become the world's most popular online learning site with 5 million unique visitors a month. He's been profiled on 60 Minutes. Time magazine has named him one of the world's most influential people. Sal Khan is out with a new book, The One World Schoolhouse, Education Reimagined, and Sal Khan joins us now. Sal, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us, what is the Khan Academy, Sal?
Khan Academy, I guess on one level, is a website. We're also a not-for-profit organization. If you go to khanacademy.org, what you'll see is a large library of videos, many of which I created myself, starting off as a hobby. But it's videos for academic topics, anything from algebra to arithmetic to physics. But on top of that, we have exercises, we have dashboards, we have tools for teachers. And the mission of our organization is really a free world-class education for anyone, anywhere.
And the whole thing, Sal, has just taken off. And I'm wondering why. Why has it taken off to the extent that it has?
Yeah, I'm personally surprised by it. It started off, as some people know, about 8 years ago, I started making the videos for my cousins that I was tutoring. And I guess, you know, like other YouTube personalities, they got popular. And many people ask why these videos in particular. I wasn't the first person to make videos on YouTube. But if I were to guess, it's that they're very conversational. They're very approachable. They cover pretty much anything you'd want to know in math or science. Many people talk about, you know, they're very focused on the intuition of the math as opposed to formula memorization. And I guess, you know, just through word of mouth, they spread.
How surprised were you that the whole thing just began to mushroom?
You know, when you first put some stuff out there for your cousins in, you know, 2006, and you realize, okay, I should have 10 cousins watching it. Looks like there's 20 or 30 people. That's kind of neat, and then that keeps growing. But then by 2009, I had 100,000 people using it every month. Now, obviously, as you said, it's 5 million. But then it started to get really crazy. I started to get, you know, people from the press. I have a lot of videos on finance, on things like what's a credit default swap or mortgage-backed security. My background is originally as an analyst at an investment firm. And so a lot of the press, I found I was reading that before they were even reporting about the financial crisis in 2008. Then later, 2009, I quit my job to kind of focus on the not-for-profit full-time. And it turned out that Bill Gates was using the content and was speaking very publicly that he used Khan Academy, used it with his kids. And then I think that took it to a whole other level.
You know, you pointed out you were in Boston working at a hedge fund when you started tutoring your cousin in math, I think it was. What was she struggling with, Sal?
She was struggling with unit conversions. She was just entering into seventh grade, and so it's just your classic miles to kilometers, ounces to gallons.
And that's what you began helping her with. And how did that experience wind up translating into this huge nonprofit that drew the interest of Bill Gates? Because how did that happen?
Yeah, you know, my cousin, she's a very bright girl, hardworking, but she was getting tracked into a slower math class, and it was unit conversion. And I told her, hey, when you go back to New Orleans, and I was in Boston at the time, I'll tutor you. And when I started tutoring her, I realized that even though she was a really good student and she was working really hard, she had all these gaps in her knowledge, that even though she was entering seventh grade, she was a little bit weak on certain aspects of decimals or fractions or negative numbers. And then the traditional model just said that, well, that's okay, and we'll just keep trying to push you down the road, and it's just going to get harder and harder for you to understand things. And I saw that when I worked with her and we took the time to really fill in those gaps, not only did she catch up with her class, but she became quite a good math student. The same girl that was having trouble going into kind of seventh grade with math, by the time she was in 10th grade, she was taking college-level calculus. So she went from being a slow student to, you know, probably one of the best students in her state, in her city. And so I started wondering, well, how typical is this, or how unusual is this? So I started working with more and more cousins, and I saw the pattern over and over again. A lot of the reason why people think they're weak at math is they just have these gaps in their knowledge, and then when they go to a more advanced class, they have trouble understanding. They can't ask a question about the more basic material, and then they have to kind of pattern match and memorize formulas.
I'm wondering, tell our listeners, Sal, exactly how you tutored your cousin that has proven to be so effective, because it is a really interesting approach that you've taken here.
Yeah, you know, in those early days, there wasn't anything, I would say, amazing about what I was doing. I was literally, it was one-on-one tutoring, which I think everyone would always recognize is the best thing if you can do it. And I would really just try to gauge where she was, try to figure out what gaps she had in her knowledge, and try to fill them in and give her progressively harder problems. And while I was doing that, and I started working with her brothers, I started writing some software that would do it for me to do that part, where it would give them exercises, give them practice, and then I, as their tutor, could see what they're doing. I think what has kind of where it took it to another level was when I started making the videos for them. You know, a friend said, "Hey, to help yourself scale, why don't you put some stuff on YouTube?" I thought it was a silly idea at first. I thought, you know, YouTube for cats playing piano, not serious math. But I put those up there, and my cousin said that they somewhat backhandedly said that they prefer me on YouTube than in person. And I think what they were saying is that they really liked the ability, especially the first time that they're engaging with some of the material, to not have the pressure of another human being kind of watching them, afraid that they might be judging them, the ability to maybe review some material that they might be embarrassed that they forgot from a couple of years ago, and they don't have to worry about being judged, and they can watch it at their own time, at their own pace, when they're ready for it. And I think that whole aspect, plus, you know, when I made those first videos, I made it very much in the same style as our tutorial sessions. You just heard my voice, you saw me write, a very conversational, even chatty sometimes. The tone of voice I use is the tone of voice I'm using right now. It's not, you know, your typical, okay, the next step in the equation, you know, that's what I guess, you know, causes stress or turns people off of mathematics. They really just want it to be approachable and conversational and focus on the intuition.
Sal Khan, the founder of the Khan Academy, is our guest this hour. He has a new book out, The One World Schoolhouse, Education Reimagined. So all of this, your experience with your cousin and then going online with YouTube helped you begin thinking about new ways to teach kids. And I'm wondering what you're thinking these days about to what extent do we need to reimagine, recreate the public education that so many of us know so well.
Yeah, and that's what essentially the book about. And you know, as you can tell, I've somewhat fallen into this role. But when we first got our first significant funding from the Gates Foundation and others, a local, and I thought that Khan Academy was just going to be the supplemental thing out on the web, kind of free tutoring for anybody. A local school district said, "Well, this is interesting. Do you think we could use you to reimagine a fifth grade math classroom?" I thought this was just pie in the sky. So I said, "Well, now that these videos exist, and this is what a lot of teachers were telling me, other teachers on the internet were saying, hey, I don't have to use my class time for lecture anymore. I can let the students watch that at their own time and pace, and I can use class time for problem solving." So what essentially used to be class time is now homework, and what used to be homework is now class time, and not my idea. It comes from other teachers, and you know, they've called that flipping the classroom.
So the teachers are available to answer questions that the kids have when they get stuck in an area, as opposed to having to teach everybody from scratch what a new concept is.
Exactly. And, you know, right now when people get together in a classroom, yeah, there's humans together, they're together, but they're really not interacting. And there's a kind of a lecture that happens for most of the time. It's fairly passive. You know, studies have shown that teachers are actually lecturing on average to the 23rd percentile, which tells you that 77% of the class is often bored, and the other 22% is lost, and only 1% is frankly being catered to. And what happens when you take that out of class time is that students can watch videos, same way my cousins, at their own time, their own pace, and then they come to class ready to ask questions. They come to class ready to tackle problems. Instead of having to do homework at home in a vacuum where you might not have a family member to help you out or you might not be able to afford a tutor, you got to do that in the classroom where you have not only the teacher to help you out, but you have your peers. And as soon as you take that one-pace-fits-all lecture out of the classroom, not only is it becoming more interactive, but it also opens up the possibility of every student learning at their own pace. And that's essentially what that first school district at Los Altos did. And one, the kids liked it more, the teachers liked it more, and they saw really good results on their test scores, and I go into a lot of detail on that in the book. And then they went district-wide, and now today 20,000 classrooms are using us in some way like that.
So the keys here, you're using some interesting words here, Sal. Interactive being one key, learning at your own pace being another. These are sort of underlying foundational principles of what you're trying to do here, right?
That's right. And, you know, when I say interactive, and there's a bit of, a positive irony. I'm not just talking about interactive like you're interacting with a computer. The irony here is that we're using technology to make human time more human. That because, you know, in a traditional classroom, the ones that we all were part of, we would go to a classroom, but you'd have to have your finger on your lip, pay attention, or look like you're paying attention, and kind of passively sit there, maybe take notes so that maybe you could stay awake. But now what we're saying is, look, if that information delivery, the lecture, can happen at your own time and pace, then when you go to a classroom, it's interactive in the human context. You're talking to, you're not told that you can't talk to your peers. You're in fact told that you should be talking to your peers. You should be tutoring them and being tutored by them. Your interactions with the teacher aren't this person who operates at a distance, who you kind of have an antagonistic relationship with. Instead, they become your mentor. They become your coach. You start to know them on a more personal level.
Again, Sal Khan is our guest. His new book, The One World Schoolhouse Education Reimagined. You can see Sal talking about the national debt and the federal budget deficit in one of his tutorials on our website. Just go to kcur.org. If you have a question for Sal about his new approach to education and learning, 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, up to date at kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. You know, Sal, you know, some folks listening might wonder, you know, there have been so many ideas for educational renovation and reform bouncing around for so many years, and yet the current system has remained, you know, by and large, unchanged for so many decades. I'm wondering, from your vantage point, now that you're several years into this, how possible is it to turn this battleship around and really infuse it with new ideas like what you're flipping out here?
You know, if you'd asked me that question 3-4 years ago, yeah, I would have felt the way most people. You know, you read the newspaper reports, it's a system that hasn't changed for hundreds of years. I actually write about that in the book. And actually, a lot of these ideas I talk about, self-paced learning, mastering concepts before moving on, using classroom for interactivity, they're actually to some degree old ideas, even ideas that have been tested, but yeah, they were never able to be done at scale, especially because the economics didn't work out. What's exciting now, and once again, I kind of found myself in this situation, and now our organization finds ourselves in this situation, is it's actually happening faster than we expected. 20,000 classrooms have adopted us, and this is only in the past really year and a half. It's growing dramatically. Our overall site usage is growing dramatically. So my guess of why it seems like now, as opposed to really any point in the last couple of hundred years, is we've kind of hit the necessary inflection point with the technology and the mindset. So, I've been on a panel with the president of Stanford University where he said, yeah, you know, Sal, bring up an interesting point. Why are we giving lectures? And when you start to have major institutions, and I know Harvard and MIT also have a similar initiative, where they start to say, yeah, we're going to start getting rid of the lecture and use that human time for something more interactive, something more valuable, I think that shows you that the plates are shifting.
And so when you hear the president of Stanford University saying that, what do you think is the future for higher education, Sal? What do you see happening there? Is the lecture going to be obsolete in 5 or 10 years?
Yeah, I think in 5 or 10 years, it will not be mainstream, especially at higher education, but even in K-12, for class time to be devoted to lecture. That can happen at the student's time and place. There is a value for kind of that component, but it'll be in these smaller bite-sized chunks where you can do data and analytics on what's good, what's not, and you can have a smaller set of very good lectures out there. But in class time, it's not that we're saying that class time will disappear. In fact, I think class time will become more valuable because you'll be able to go interact with people, do projects, tutor, get tutored, interact with the teacher, be mentored by them. In terms of higher education, I write a lot about this in the book. Education in general is several things. It's a learning experience. It's a socialization experience. Mm-hmm. It's a credentialing experience. And to some degree, universities are able to continue to raise their tuition 5% faster than inflation because we're telling everyone that in order to have a white-collar career, you have to get a degree. And so they have certainly kind of a stranglehold on this thing that you have to get. And I see in the next couple of years, you're going to see a decoupling, a separation from the credentialing and the learning process. And as soon as there are credentials that, regardless of how you learn the material, whether it's online or at a university or from a textbook or through an apprenticeship, you can prove that you know it. And that proof, that credential, carries as much weight as any university degree. And we and other people are working on this as we speak. And I write a lot about this. Then I think it fundamentally changes the economics and the ability for universities to continue to raise tuitions at that rate.
That's interesting. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Let's go to Fred from Chicago. Fred, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. Just wanted to pass on, I couldn't agree more with what the gentleman speaking about. I've had a lot of experience over in China, Shanghai in particular, and there's a Penkepok who's founded Sabot, and maybe the gentleman might even know the company. And what the Chinese have done is that they've turned the entire educational system on its ear in a good way, and it's a subscription cyber education, and it's enrolled so that each student, family, whomever they want to, enrolls into the process of the educational system, and then they test out, and just like he was saying, they advance through the categories as they learn. It keeps down the infrastructure cost, it sets models, it sets goals, and not only that, is it already exposes the young learners, and we're talking 3, 4, 5, 6 years of age, to the cyber world that they're going to be experiencing anyway. And I just thought that that was a really fascinating model.
Fred, thank you for the phone call. Sal, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that I'm not directly familiar with that organization. I think in spirit it's very similar. And, you know, one other advantage when you move to kind of a there's two realities. There's the seat time based reality, and even at the university level, literally your classes are defined in terms of credit hours, which means how many hours per week are you going to sit in a chair. Instead of having that, the model that the caller just described is really a competency based system, which is what I'm describing as well. Is you move on when you show that you have competency in something, you set a goal and you achieve it. And one of the side effects, which might be more powerful than learning the algebra or learning the physics or learning the grammar, is that when you have a model like that, instead of it being passive, let me sit in this chair and hopefully some information will seep into my head, you become a very active learner, a very independent learner. You take ownership of your own destiny to some degree. And in the schools that we've worked with, that seems to be a more valuable trait or skill than the academic skills themselves.
We've had a request for the Khan Academy website. It's khanacademy.org. That's K-H-A-N, Academy, all one word, .org. Again, the founder of that academy, Sal Khan, is with us here this morning. You know, there is sort of a great irony here, Sal, that a guy who used to work at a hedge fund is now showing up on 60 Minutes and being named by Time Magazine as one of its most 100 influential people on the planet because you've taken a different look at education. That's pretty amazing. What do you make of it?
Yeah, you know, it's strange for me in a good way. I wouldn't, you know, if you had asked me 6, 7 years ago, I wouldn't have predicted that I would have been doing this. But, I think it shows that there's a huge hunger. A lot of it, people have been surprised. As you mentioned, you know, there have been many attempts to kind of do something in education. And it's even surprised me, the scale that we're getting to, the amount of people who are using us in some way. And yeah, it's given us a platform so that we can start to, you know, not just throw out ideas, but we can actually implement the ideas and have people use them at scale.
Yeah. I'm wondering what it's been like for you to rub elbows with Bill Gates, who's taken such a great interest, as you've pointed out here this morning, in what you're doing. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, you can imagine it's a bit surreal for me. I grew up,
I can imagine.
Bill Gates is kind of, you know, one of my heroes, and you find out a couple of years ago, or that, you know, he's watching your videos that you originally made for your cousins. It actually makes you a little nervous. But you know, when I first met him, I remember 20% of my brain was talking to him, and the other 80% was saying, "You're talking to Bill Gates. You're talking to Bill Gates. Don't mess this up. You're talking to Bill Gates." But you know, now that I feel a little bit of that has died. Although I still have part of my brain that still does that. He's an incredibly smart person. He's incredibly thoughtful about what he does, and I never cease to be impressed by how much he cares about this whole space of education.
That's interesting. Well, Sal, it's been a pleasure to have you, and all the best in your great new venture with the Khan Academy, and we'll be very eager to pay attention to your progress, too.
Great. Thanks so much.
All the best, Sal. That's Sal Khan, author of The One World Schoolhouse, Education Reimagined. You can find out more information about Sal and our other guests at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk with Jackson County Executive Mike Sanders about commuter rail. We'll look at why some Kansas officials don't even know their own laws. And we'll hear our latest installment of 90 Mile View. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.